Brothers, as we know, this is a significant time for Catholic youth and young adults in the Church. As we look forward to October's Synod on Young People, the Faith, and Vocational Discernment, we are also preparing for World Youth Day in Panama at the beginning of next year. Our June meeting provides us an opportunity to highlight the great gifts youth and young adults have to offer the Church and to continue the path so well modeled by St. John Paul II and our Holy Father, Pope Francis. Namely, to listen and learn from the faithful witness of young people themselves. With that in mind, our executive committee thought it would be helpful to have a panel of speakers who, speaking from their own experience, could share how the Church can best encounter and accompany youth and young adults as we grow together. These three young people were also sent by the USCCB to the pre-synod gathering in Rome with Pope Francis in March of this year. I now invite Monsignor Bransfield to provide a brief background for each of our panelists as they experience a COVID, as well as the topics they will be speaking on. After we hear from the speakers, we will have the opportunity to discuss further.
Thank you, Your Eminence. Our first speaker is Ms. Katie Prejean McGrady, who hails from the Diocese of Lake Charles in Louisiana. Katie is a wife, new mother, youth minister, and a popular speaker. She has worked with many youth and young adult communities across North America. In addition to various media appearances, she has published two books, Room 24, Adventures of a New Evangelist, and Follow, Your Lifelong Adventure with Jesus. Katie will speak about the interactions with other young Catholics from around the world at the pre-synod gathering and the realities faced by today's young people. Our second speaker, Mr. Nick Lopez, is the Director of Campus Ministry for the University of Dallas. He received his master's degree in theological studies from the University of Dallas in 2016. He has served as a parish young adult minister in Southern California. Nick is a guest columnist for the Catholic News Service column, In Light of Faith, focused on millennials. He was a panelist at the Convocation of Catholic Leaders last summer and will be a main stage panelist at the Fifth Encuentro national event in September 2018. Nick will share his experience addressing the Holy Father at the pre-synod and on the pastoral activities of the Church for youth and young adults. Our third and final speaker, Brother Javier Hansen, is a brother of the Christian schools in the LaSallian district of San Francisco, New Orleans. He serves as a religion teacher at Cathedral High School, El Paso, in Texas. He is currently a brother in temporary vows, having entered the novitiate of the LaSallian region of North America in 2015 and made first vows in summer of 2016. Brother Javier is currently working on his master's degree in education from the University of Texas. Brother Javier will speak to the ecumenical aspect of the pre-synod gathering and the understanding of vocation among young people today. Please welcome Brother Javier, Nick, and Katie.
Thank you, Your Eminence, and thank you, Your Eminences and Excellencies, it's a fun thing to say, for inviting us to speak briefly on our experiences at the pre-synod gathering in Rome this past March and on young people today. And though he's not here, a special shout out to my hometown shepherd, Bishop Provo. It was a remarkable honor to be chosen to represent the United States. And we are humbled by the chance you offered us to attend, speak on behalf of the youth and young adults of our country, and continue to unpack what happened at a gathering that, quite honestly, changed our lives. The pre-synod signaled just how valuable the Pope finds the voices of young people to be. And we are very excited to be here to share our voices and aid you in your work. I arrived at the pre-synod with a resume that I'm proud of, and I thought I knew a lot when I arrived. I thought my wide range of perspective, experiences, and expertise and the insights provided by the USCCB staff would give me plenty to share and contribute, and I did. I was certainly able to. But it became quickly evident that no matter what we might say or offer, it was going to be even more important for us to listen. The conversations we had with people from all over the world shed light on the opportunities and challenges that we face here in the United States. We were able to identify what we do really well and how we can improve in our ministries with youth and young adults. Many conversations that I had throughout the week were enlightening and informative, and a few stand out. A young man in Egypt was interested to learn about youth conferences, which are very popular in the U.S. He wanted to learn what we do when we gather young people together for formation, for prayer, for fellowship. And I realized the significance of the resources that we put into these critically important events, which are often kickstarts to journeys of faith for many teens and young adults. I can speak personally. My faith journey began at a Steubenville youth conference when I was a sophomore in high school. A man from Ghana told me about the professional job training that he has to do with the catechetical programs he leads because of the economic hardships in Africa. This made me grateful for the focus that we're able to have on catechesis alone and how we're able to concentrate primarily on sharing the tenets of the faith, solid formation, and walking side by side with young people as they encounter Jesus. But perhaps most moving was a time I spent with a woman from China, who also happened to be my roommate while I was there. She shared many insights with me about what it's like to grow up in a communist country where Catholicism is oppressed, discouraged, and under governmental control. She shared how difficult it is to prepare young people for the reception of the sacraments because faith formation is forbidden. Her powerful testimony was inspiring, and it brought me to tears when she said, "Pray for the church in China. We are being given the chance to carry Christ's cross, and we are becoming saints." Her testimony was an encouragement to me for us as an American church to remain stalwart in the face of mockery, condemnation, and misunderstanding, and to encourage young people to remain steadfast in their practice of the faith and to be courageous in the defense of what they believe, especially in a culture that seems to want to engage with all opinions and teachings except at times ours. Attending this pre-synodal gathering was valuable in that we were able to learn and experience the universal church, and it really is remarkable to read the summary document that we wrote as a result of this dialogue and recognize that it is truly a wide-ranging, global, inclusive perspective that seeks to inform the Synod Fathers about what is truly taking place in the lives of youth and young adults today.
Good afternoon. Like Katie, I am grateful to you all for having us here today. Before I begin, I also would like to offer a special greeting to Bishop Edward Burns and Bishop Greg Kelly of my Diocese of Dallas. I'm not sure if he's here, but also Archbishop Gustavo Garcia Silera of San Antonio, my native archdiocese. Good afternoon. It is an immense honor to be with you all today, and thank you for taking seriously the call of Pope Francis to invite young people to discuss our generation's experiences with you. I know many of you have been passionately involved in the youth and young adult ministries of your respective dioceses well before this synod was called, and for that I am also very grateful for it was through those efforts that I am able to stand before you today. 2 weeks before the pre-synod gathering, I received an email from the Vatican that went something like this. You have been selected to address the Holy Father, Pope Francis, on behalf of the young people of America. Congratulations. Your address is due by the end of the week. Oh, and P.S. here in Europe, we consider both North and South America one America. Good luck. This certainly was a daunting task that caused me great stress, but of course proved to be one of the most important moments of my life. With the swift help of Paul Jarzembowski from the USCCB staff and his colleagues, I was able to craft an address as completely as possible with the time given. What resulted was a summary of what I felt were some of the most important aspects of a young person's life, making sure I balance the negative realities with the positive. Unfortunately today, our popular societal opinion of youth and young adults is that we have a lot of problems, or simply that we are the problem to be solved. Some say we cannot commit, or that we're all addicted to technology, or that we're religiously or spiritually illiterate. Yes, we do face many issues, and maybe we cause a few of them as well. But strengthening our bond with one another to confront those issues was one of the main reasons I chose to open and close my address in Spanish. While I speak very little Spanish, it was a simple act of acknowledgement and solidarity with our brothers and sisters of Latin America, who we in the United States too often struggle to embrace. In my address, I shared the realities we face in the Americas, but as the pre-synod gathering went on, I learned that these challenges were also present in many other areas of the world, as each day, people approached me with words of thanks and reflection for my address, sharing with me their own similar situations. And to my surprise, I returned home to many emails, Facebook messages, and phone calls from people thanking me for telling the Holy Father what we as young people are going through. And while I cannot speak for the other four young adults from the other four continents who spoke that morning as well, I can imagine that their experience was very much the same. For what I found most important in our presentations was that despite some of the unique situations that come from our own particular place in the world, there is so much of our lived experience that we share in common. It was important that the Holy Father heard that common thread in our testimonies. And I also think it was just as important for us as young people to be reminded of that, not simply to show us that we're not alone, but more importantly, that we are in this together. And to address the obvious question, yes, it was an amazingly beautiful experience to address the Holy Father, to embrace him and to hear him say with a hearty giggle, "Hablaste muy bien, you spoke very well." What marked that experience, however, more than anything else, was his authenticity. This did not feel like a diplomatic meeting or simply a political gesture. It was a real desire to encounter and hear us. So again, I thank you for having us here today and for continuing that dialogue in the spirit of Pope Francis.
Hello, my name is Brother Javier Hansen. I am a De La Salle Christian brother, currently assigned to Cathedral High School in El Paso, Texas. So hello to Bishop Mark Seitz. I teach 11th grade religion, which consists of topics in morality. So I use Bishop Robert Barron's videos quite often, so a shout out to you as well. I am also originally from Northern California and was confirmed by Bishop Jaime Soto, so hello to you too. So again, echoing Nick, Katie and Nick, thank you all for inviting us here to share our experiences. When we were briefed by the USCCB on what would happen at the pre-synod gathering, we were told that we were discerned because we were young and because we worked daily with other young people. Thank you all for your commitment to youth and young adults. One aspect of my pre-synod experience that I would like to highlight and share is about the presence of members in my small group who were invited to represent different religious traditions. In my group, there was a member from India, a Sikh, and there was also a participant who is from Zimbabwe, who is currently an Anglican minister in England. The Sikh shared his experiences from his own faith tradition. He spoke about how in his temple, they play music throughout the day, so people are encouraged to come in and pray. It made me wonder how we as Catholics might consider how our own churches can be made more available as places of refuge and respite for youth and young adults in our communities. The presence of young people from different religious traditions, even some non-believers, was a critical part of this pre-synod experience. It spoke to me the importance of ecumenism in our work with young people. The presence of different religions and non-believers was a specific request of Pope Francis, and one that I was encouraged by. It made me reflect on a book by C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity, when he says that as Christians, we don't have to believe other religions are simply wrong, but that we are free to think that all religions might contain some element of truth. This point is also emphasized in the Vatican II document, Nostra Aetate.
So as you can see, we had a pretty remarkable experience. But perhaps the most remarkable thing about the pre-synod gathering was that we were able to synthesize and summarize the thoughts of 300 young people from around the world and present our ideas in a succinct, straightforward, and hopefully helpful way to the Pope and the Synod Fathers. The document produced speaks to a variety of experiences and opinions, and it offers a perspective that is honest, authentic, and in some cases, challenging. The goal of the document, which has been disputed in some circles and questioned in others, is to provide insight and to offer an honest perspective of those under 30, hoping to give readers a chance to understand what's going on with youth and young adults today. So to that end, we would like to highlight just a few quotes and key points from the final document. And thank you so much to Archbishop Pierre for speaking so eloquently about it earlier and really setting the stage for this conversation. In the introduction, we provide context for the document as a whole. It is important at the outset to clarify the parameters of this document. It is neither to compose a theological treatise, nor is it to establish new church teaching. Rather, it is a statement reflecting the specific realities, personalities, beliefs, and experiences of the young people of the world. This is to give the bishops a compass, pointing towards a clearer understanding of young people. I think it's very important for all of you to know the point of the document. We want the bishops attending the synod in October, and every bishop in the world, really, to know what we think, how we feel, what we face, the questions and concerns that young people have, and how they love the church and ultimately desire a relationship with Jesus Christ. We hope you read this document as a snapshot of the conversations had at the pre-synod. Imagine sitting down with a teen or a young adult and having a cup of coffee and asking them a variety of questions. That's how this document should be read, as the transcript and summary of an honest conversation about what the church is doing and what more the church can be doing to engage young people. It's also a chance to honestly examine how to lead young people to Jesus by first talking with them about their feelings, confusions, concerns, and cares. Pope Francis encouraged this process, and I believe this process of dialogue with young people was not only valuable at the Vatican for the purposes of the synod, but could be valuable for every diocese and parish. What if 25% of active Catholics, including us here today, our pastors and lay leaders, made it a priority to have coffee or a meal with 10 teens or young adults from your community? I am aware that the USCCB is engaged in the Fifth Encuentro and the national dialogue processes, which is a great place to start. But when we simply listen to one another, barriers down, face to face, the impact of that conversation is life-changing, and it leads young people to Jesus. I'd also like to point out a line in the document that was never edited in any of the three drafts, and I know it was never edited because I wrote it. I included it in my English language group summary, and it made it through all three drafts with just the addition of a comma. And I'm pretty proud of that. It's pretty cool to say that I wrote something that's in a document read by the Pope. It's the concluding sentence of the first section, which addresses the challenges and opportunities of youth and young adults in the world today. Ultimately, many of us strongly want to know Jesus, yet often struggle to realize that he alone is the source of true self-discovery. For it is in a relationship with him that the human person ultimately comes to discover him or herself. Thus, we have found that young people want authentic witnesses, men and women who vibrantly express their faith and relationship with Jesus while encouraging others to approach, meet, and fall in love with Jesus themselves. This expresses just how valuable and important personal testimony and witness of faithful men and women is to a young person seeking to know Jesus and understand the church. Teens and young adults are seeking mentors and respond most to those who share their stories, talk about their relationship with Christ, and invite them to experience the goodness, beauty, and community of the church. This is precisely what I have seen work time and time again, both in my own life, in my classroom when I was a teacher, in youth ministry when I worked in a parish, and at the events that I've spoken at. Young people want to encounter mentors who are living faithful lives and who can journey with them as they seek to live that life themselves. As a young adult, I ask you to support initiatives, programs, and individuals who walk alongside youth and young adults seeking meaning in their lives. It's not about numbers. It's about the quality of relationships, relationships that I know we all in this room can have with young people. We desire good ministry leaders, both lay and ordained, who witness to and image Jesus Christ. And I hope that that becomes all of us. Thank you.
The second part of our document consists of the topics of faith, discernment, and accompaniment. In our individual language groups, we discussed how many youth and young adults in their ministries are more receptive to sharing and unpacking life's experiences than hearing theological discourses. This does not eliminate the idea that traditional catechesis works better for some young people. Continuous part of the formulating of our document was sharing our experience of the person of Jesus. Some young people imagine Jesus only as a historical figure and moral teacher. This can be detrimental to the faith. Many young people also want to be connected with the community like the church and should be encouraged to do so. However, a number of young people feel disconnected when they perceive that some leaders in the church look upon ministry with them, the youth, as a burden and rather focus solely on administration. Our mission should not simply be to inform young people about the faith through catechesis, but to empower them to be leaders and ambassadors of the faith to their peers. Young people express a desire for the church to clearly state and help them understand the difficult teachings of the church. One of these was the role of women in the church. Pope Francis addressed this particular concern in his remarks to us. Vocation was discussed at length, and is sometimes perceived as an exclusive type of holiness, limited only to the priesthood and men and women religious. I often find myself having to explain to people how my congregation doesn't have priests. Every vocation, the single life, priesthood, marriage, and religious life should be encouraged, fostered, and highlighted. As a young religious brother, the need for accompaniment has been vital in my initial formation. This accompaniment should be made available to all young people. These companions can encourage young people to speak about their own understanding of life and the faith, their ideas about the future, and connecting it to their vocation. These guides can model the faith by their witness, but more specifically by their testimony, but more so by their witness. These guides must respect the journey of discernment young people are on. Lastly, laymen and women, not just priests and religious, can also serve as these guides and mentors for young people.
And lastly, from part 3, paragraph 12, we wrote, "The church must involve young people in its decision-making processes and offer them more leadership roles. These positions need to be on parish, diocesan, national, and an international level, even on a commission to the Vatican. We strongly feel that we are ready to be leaders who can grow and be taught by the older members of the church. We need leadership programs for the formation and continued development of young leaders." Of all the ways suggested to move forward in this section, this I found to be the most compelling for two reasons. First, some of these programs and initiatives do already exist here in the United States. These initiatives include various youth and young adult ministries and Pastoral Juvenil Hispana and parishes, high school and college campus ministries, and diocesan youth and young adult events. Most of these programs are done through the parish, campus, and diocese, as well as through various national organizations. However, a number of these come from the mind and passion of young people themselves who are starting movements and groups to better form young Catholic disciples and leaders. As a young adult who was formed by such programs and one who currently works and leads such programs, I humbly implore you to continue to support and seek out these opportunities in your dioceses. Become familiar with them, the pastoral leaders who coordinate them, and the young people who take part in them. Please ensure them that the formation and the zeal they are receiving from these ministries will not go to waste in your diocese. Second, we are asking that you consider making young people an active part of the decision-making process of the church. For example, when my university goes through administrative changes, students meet with the potential administrators for interviews and other formal and informal meetings to assess the candidates and provide feedback that actually heavily influences the final decision. There are many opportunities at the parish, diocesan, and national levels that could certainly use similar kinds of inclusive strategizing that welcomes and considers the viewpoint of young adults, not just as recipients of ministry, but as partners in ministry. And from part 3, paragraph 14, we noted, "We respond to initiatives that offer us an understanding of the sacraments, prayer, and the liturgy. The sacraments are of great value to us who desire to develop a deeper sense of what they mean in our lives. This is true of marriage preparation, the sacrament of reconciliation, preparation for baptism of children, and so forth. Because of the lack of clear and attractive presentation as to what the sacraments truly offer, some of us go through the process of receiving, but undervaluing them. It is very clear that there is a genuine thirst for Christ in the sacraments in the hearts of young people, especially in the Eucharist. I think it is absolutely true that many Catholics, not just young Catholics, undervalue the sacraments, perhaps because of what it says here, many of us just don't understand what they truly offer. In the end, it won't matter how creative our initiatives, our programs, or movements are if the Eucharist and the sacraments aren't at the foundation of the lives of our young people. While this admittedly stems into a much larger issue, perhaps one way to address this is to create better opportunities for hospitality and engaging young people in the parish. In doing so, perhaps youth and young adults can begin to first see the parish as a home, which will allow them to become more willingly active in the liturgy and in the life of the church. And of course, opportunities for catechesis should be reinforced, where parishioners of all ages can be invited to learn about the history, the symbols, and the meaning within the Mass. I believe Pope Francis chose to end our pre-synod gathering with the Mass, not because it was a nice way to end our time together, and not even because Palm Sunday is the international celebration for youth and young adults. Rather, he was showing us that this must be what our labor draws us to in the end. All of our work, our discussions, and our planning for how best the church can accompany young people must ultimately lead us to the table of the Lord. Otherwise, we labor in vain. Thank you.
In the spirit of the pre-synod, this was our theme the whole week. We talked together, and so we are here, and we would like to make ourselves available to have conversation and discussion at this time. So thank you for the opportunity to speak, Cardinal DiNardo, and your excellencies and eminences.
Thank you so much, Katie, Nick, and Brother Javier. You've given us some enlightening and succinct remarks, and we thank you also for your witness and for your service to the church. We have time for questions and discussions now, and brothers, I welcome your comments on these very fine presentations and some dialogue back and forth. First, we have Archbishop Vigneron from Detroit. Archbishop Vigneron.
Thank you, and thanks to the presenters. Nick, I have a particular question for you. I was struck with that formulation about what the sacraments truly offer. Implied in that, I hope I don't have it wrong, is that sometimes we who do catechesis have been presenting something else or something not the truly offer. Could you elaborate a little bit on that? That would be helpful for me. What's been the ersatz offer instead of what the sacraments truly offer? I'd be interested in that.
Well, certainly I appreciate the question on the semantics of that wording. At least in my assessment of reading that, it seemed like perhaps I don't think it's an issue perhaps with the catechists themselves, but with what the faithful are receiving. We might know that this is a sacrament. I will speak from my own experience. Unfortunately, many members of my own family who are born and baptized Catholic, the vast majority do not practice the faith anymore. They understand the sacraments are, they're similar at this other evangelical church down the road, and they can offer the same things to me. They can offer communion, things of that nature. But I feel it's just this misunderstanding of what they truly offer. Certainly other communities and communions offer certain sacraments or things that look like our sacraments, but to truly look at the salvific source and the roots and the graces that come from that, ultimately all of that packaged together, whether that's the fault of the catechist or the misunderstanding of those who are receiving that type of formation, I believe, is just going to depend on the situation itself. But I feel like the question was, other places can offer something similar to this, but what the Catholic Church truly offers in these sacraments is something that we're either forgetting, we're ignoring, or we just don't know to begin with.
Thank you. Anyone else want to agree? They're happy where they are. That's beautiful. Okay, thanks, Archbishop Vigneron. Now, Archbishop Kurtz, followed by Archbishop Jacobs.
First of all, thanks to the three of you. You're very
articulate and faith-filled. We're lucky to have you representing the United States. I'm in the Archdiocese of Louisville. We have, twice a year, we have what's called the Archdiocesan Pastoral Council, and it's made up of the chairs of all the parish councils of the parishes. And this past, I guess about 6 weeks ago, we took on a topic of the Synod and Youth Ministry, and a number of our youth advisory came and sat at each table, so there were maybe 12 or so young people, and there were about three or four people who were representing the parish councils. One of the things that came as a result of the conversation, and it was meant not to be an interview of that poor young person who was at the table, but actually an exchange. And it was an exchange over looking at the same topics. And one of the conclusions was how much in common people of different ages have. So many of the young people said, well, we like stories, we like living witnesses, and many of the others said, well, so do we. And so my question, one of the others said, well, we like to be listened to, and guess what? The other people there said the same thing. So my question has to do with commonality. I guess what I'm looking at in terms of ministry is how isolated should we be thinking about young adults? And to what extent is there a commonality that in the process we should be encouraging? So my thought is, when you're interacting with people like yourself who are articulate and faith-filled but are as old as I am, what do you find in common? What are things that you'd say maybe transcend your age, and you say, well, here's something that we share in common? I'd be curious.
Archbishop, thank you for your question. I'm a big fan of yours. I follow you on Twitter. So I think that you're spot on. We're Catholic, so we all have something in common, right? Or they're disaffiliated Catholics, so they probably have questions. Or we all watch television. You can start there, right? It doesn't have to be always this profound, high and mighty. I mean, we should be talking about the sacraments, but maybe the conversation begins with, and I'll speak from my own experience in my diocese. So Lake Charles is tiny but mighty, and Bishop Provo endorsed my first book. So I asked him if I could take him out to dinner. So my fiance and I, at the time, now my husband, took him to a very nice steak dinner restaurant, and the owner of the restaurant knew who he was, and we sat down and we started visiting, and I was, understandably a little nervous because you're having dinner with the boss, essentially. And my husband, and this is not to say that we should all be taking young adults out for drinks, but my husband ordered a drink. And Bishop Provo smiled, and he ordered one too. And it's like this wall went down where all of a sudden there was just this, we can be people together. So I think the commonality begins with an attitude and an understanding of, we're walking into this room not ready to shove faith down the throat, but to meet the person and to see who they are and love them for who they are, and answer their questions. And then that conversation might drift to, you get the chance to share your vocation story, or you get the chance to answer the question about the all-celibate priesthood, or why we do this particular thing or that particular thing. I think it begins with the very human connection of, we have this commonality, and not being afraid to go to that place and have that conversation. And perhaps that's one of the issues. We're a little scared of the other, and that which is different. Young people are intimidated by the bishop or the priest, and the priest and the bishop might be intimidated by the young person. Well, I would be willing to bet many of you in here have a Netflix account and probably have a favorite show. It's a great starting point with a young adult. That could be a conversation starter.
Go ahead, sure.
I'd like to address that question in regards to vocation, and for those of you who are also religious and diocesan priests, and just from the sense that when I first joined the Brothers, and I think all of us probably sensed in some older model that encouraged our vocation, a sense of holiness and piety. But eventually, and I don't know if this happened to you too, when I started kind of joining my Brothers for dinner on my college campus, I realized how human they were. And I even felt more attracted to them. They really treated me like family, and we are brothers. And so to piggyback off what Katie said, I would say that I think it's important for young people to see us as religious and to model good behavior, but at the same time, when we really get to know them, to just show them how human we are. The document, if you've had the chance to read it in the second part, talks about how sometimes we put our religious role models on high pedestals, and when they fall, and when sometimes they make mistakes, it has a crashing influence on young people who maybe saw them as mentors. And so I think this is where authenticity really matters, is that we need to be authentic with young people. We can't put ourselves so high on a pedestal that if maybe one day we do fall, it doesn't impact them as much as some young people have been impacted.
Sure, go ahead.
Sorry, one brief comment on that. Thank you for your question very much, Archbishop. The particular part of your question regarding how should we be isolating young adults as far as a demographic in ministry compared to other aspects, one of the big parts of the conversation that we had was this need for intergenerational discussion and conversation. We can't just have a church run by only young people. We can't have just a church run by only old people. And then even younger and older, there's got to be all of us in this together. There is that need. So it's kind of a slippery slope when we decide we want to just isolate one demographic and go after that. But then the detriment of doing that too much, then there's not really a common thread between the other generations. Just as a reality, it just seems like working in young adult ministry, there's a lot more emphasis, especially in the parishes, if I may say so, is put into the youth ministry. You don't really see a lot of young adult ministries on the parish level. And the difference there between, you know, what young adults and what older adults experience, certainly there's a lot of things there. And many of you bishops here who are going through your first year, there's that period of transition where you would like someone who's been in those shoes to walk with you. How do you learn to do these things? Young adults are at that stage in their life. Well, of course, all of us in all periods of our life transition. Young adults are doing that more specifically in so many other ways. And so when it comes to isolating the young adult and specifically, it's that need for accompaniment in those periods of transition. We do the same thing for youth ministry and their transitions, but it's helping young adults in the transition that we experience in particular, and how we can get through that is how I understood that question.
Thanks. Archbishop Jacobs, you had a hand up. Somebody else has someone hand up here. Who's that?
In preparation for the diocesan consultation, we had some discussions in the chancery, and there was a debate between the youth ministry director and myself that this was a synod that is ultimately aimed at vocation particularly to a state in life, and his insistence was, no, this is all about youth ministry and accompanying youth. Of course, I'm right, and he's wrong, but even with the presentation here this afternoon, it can give the impression that, well, there's this focus on youth and accompanying youth and outreach to youth, and then this other topic about discernment and vocation, particularly to a state in life. I'd just be interested to hear if it's really, you know, as separate as some might say, or I seem to think that it's reaching out and accompanying youth and helping to form them, particularly for the sake of leading them in that discernment and ultimately a choice to be married or single, to be a religious, or to be a priest in the Archdiocese of Dubuque.
Was it Greg Kelly?
So the Archdiocese of Dubuque, correct me if I'm wrong, you bring like 10 buses to the National Catholic Youth Conference, so you've got it going on over there. Okay. I think it's both and, very Catholic answer, right? I think when we accompany young people in youth and young adult ministry, that leads to good vocations. And that's just a very general statement, but when we walk with the young person as a high school freshman and they have a really great experience with a diocesan priest who's, you know, playing soccer with them at the summer camp, or they meet the young married couple that comes and tells the story of how they met, or they meet a religious sister who just is so full of life and joy, and that particular individual walks with them, that is fostering and inspiring the vocation. So while we're not particularly saying youth ministry equals discernment. I think we're broadening that definition of discernment when we say we want to walk with young people as they're figuring out their vocation and their call to reach heaven in a particular way. You are correct, more than your director of youth ministry, to say that, yes, there is a distinction in the document, but I think we need to read it holistically as one works for the other.
Bishop Sanchez, I think you had your card up there.
Madam Bishop. A question came to mind when Nick made a response to Archbishop Vigneron. In my early ministry to the Hispanic community, you know what I felt sometimes is that the Spanish families gravitated to, smaller non-Catholic churches because there was a sense of belonging and camaraderie. And they would, those same families would come to us for sacraments. So there was kind of like a belief in the Catholic nature of the sacraments, but they were meeting or finding another need met in a smaller non-Catholic church. I was wondering if that was an experience you might have had at all.
Thank you for your question, Bishop. That's a very good question. I'll have to answer that. I am very aware of that experience. However, in the areas that I've ministered and where I've come from, it seems to be a little different. I think the sense of community in the Latino community, that's huge. To be able to belong to a larger family, to have this familial communal aspect, is honestly a part of the church that sometimes, depending on the parish, we don't do too well. We often go and our worship is very individualized with ourselves and our families. We go for the hour, then we leave. There's not this sense of, at least comparatively to other confessions, where we can linger and everyone knows each other. Everyone knows when someone isn't there for worship that week. And so a lot of Hispanics I notice in my family and others that I've ministered to go to other larger evangelical churches or maybe smaller evangelical churches to get that sense of community as well. For me, however, I think you're right. There is a reality where they might go there, but their children are still going to be baptized in the Catholic Church. For me, however, what I've noticed is that doesn't seem to be a sense of we understand the sacrament. It's Latinos, like I'm sure with a lot of other cultures, we're very big on tradition. You know, if grandmother, great-grandmother, if abuelita says you got to get baptized in the Catholic Church, you get baptized in the Catholic Church because it's the tradition to do it. It's part of your culture. So the Latino-Hispanic community, at least some that I've worked with, do all of those things and go back to the sacraments because it is a part of the culture. And unfortunately, I will say, most of those wouldn't do so out of because they understand the importance of the sacraments, therefore we go back and do that. So there's a bridge that needs to be, that needs to kind of go over those two gaps there of how do we bring them back, because we certainly sense some value in it regardless if we seek those for the right reasons or not.
Bishop George Thomas, followed by Archbishop Coeur de Leon. Somebody else is up here.
Well, a very special thanks to the three of you. One of our very esteemed colleagues, the late Avery Cardinal Dulles, wrote a sweeping review of religious education. It was published posthumously. He passed away in 2008. But he made this observation. He said that certainly my generation, so adults now in their 50s and 60s, were oftentimes catechized but unevangelized. As you fast forward another 20 or 30 years, his concern was the generation is evangelized but uncatechized. And I think a variation of the theme that you so well said so well, Katie, is concerned that many are sacramentalized but oftentimes uncatechized. In my meetings in the Diocese of Helena with young adults this past couple of years, the young adult group obviously has said we need both to form the heads and the hearts of our people. But they made what I think is a very important observation that has helped me approach the young adult community in a very different way. Their first caveat was one size does not fit all. There's a very complicated demographic with some people living in mom's basement and other people having professional positions and raising families. But they said, we want these six things. Number one, teach us to pray and to love the sacraments. The second, we ask for opportunities to serve, most especially the poor. The third is to form our heads with substantial content, catechesis, because we're getting eaten alive in the marketplace and in the universities. The next, we want opportunities for social interaction with other Catholics. We need to support each other and help each other in this time in our life. The next is opportunities for leadership, already articulated so well. And finally, we can be very powerful evangelizers of this new generation if we have the doors open to us. And I think their insights are, for me personally, valuable in putting together a very workable paradigm that now, in my new diocese, God willing, will be very useful. But a thank you to the three of you. You're marvelous.
Any comments you want to make about Bishop Thomas's observations? The panelists? You've done it. You've succinctly said it all, Bishop Thomas. That's great there. Archbishop Cordiglione, followed by Cardinal Wuerl.
Yes, I would like to address this question to Katie as the newly married, or at least relatively recently married. Because one part, when we speak about accompanying young people, one sector of young people I think that is ignored perhaps the most are the newly married. We invest a lot in preparation, and we give that a lot of effort, invest resources, and we're with them all the way up to the time they get married. Then after they get married, they're kind of on their own. They're not sure where they fit in. And if we're lucky, we'll see them again when they're ready to have a child baptized or want to enroll them in one of our schools or religious education programs. We bishops know how important it is when a priest is newly ordained to assign him in a parish that will be a good experience, a mentoring experience for him. The same is true for married couples in their first year of marriage and their relationship to the church. Now, I have a double motive for addressing the question to you, because your diocese has initiated changing all of that. And we're in San Francisco starting to implement the Witness to Love program, where an older, more experienced married couple walks with the engaged couple and then continues to walk with them after they get married. And I know how successful this has been in evangelization, where these couples continue to practice the faith throughout their marriage. So I'd like to ask you about your own experience of being newly married in relationship to the church, and that of your peers, insofar as you know, because you may be a little more involved with the church than some of your peers. And then secondly, your reflections on how we can better leverage this, take advantage of the opportunity to evangelize newly married couples in this way.
You're absolutely correct. It's the first year of marriage is the hardest, and marriage prep woefully underprepared me for those daily grinding aspects of the marriage. I learned everything I could have learned about NFP, and I knew how to balance a checkbook, but nobody taught me about how to fight with my husband when he does the dishes differently than I do. And I'm going to call my mom if I've got that question or that frustration, but I also kind of don't want to talk to my mom about how I'm fighting with my husband, because like that's, you know, that's just a different level of relationship. So I think you're absolutely correct that sometimes married couples become isolated. And so then it's becoming an experience of, well, I go to church because I'm supposed to go to church, and like we're a married couple and we're going to go to church, but then feeling alone within that whole parish community. The Witness to Love program is it's fantastic and it's taking off, as is the domestic church movement, which is it came to the United States and in Lake Charles, and it's since spread like wildfire. I think it boils down to whatever couple that accompanies the young married couple through formation and preparation, that couple that's assigned, right, they've signed up to do this ministry because they feel called, should also be invited to continue that relationship long after the couple is married, but then also provide opportunities for other young married couples to form community in a very organic way within the parish life. So my witness couple were in their 70s, and they're very holy people, and I love them dearly, but in talking to them about some of those daily practical things was difficult. And so my husband and I, Tommy, we sought out friends of the same age. And then when we got pregnant and we were excited about welcoming our daughter, we sought out other young couples with families that we could ask advice from. And it was just this very organic process to where now we probably have 6 or 7 close couple friends that get together on a regular basis for dinner. It's not something sanctioned by my diocese. It doesn't happen at a parish. It happens on my back porch. But it's ministry, because all of us are gathering together for conversation. And so we have kind of shared that experience with some of our other friends who have formed their own little pockets of people that get to hang out. And I think this organic development of community, and that it applies to married couples, it applies to young people in high school, that organic development of friendship to walk with and to accompany further.
Cardinal Wuerl, followed by Cardinal Tobin.
Thank you, Your Eminence. And to the three of you, thank you so very much. As has already been said, it's so refreshing, but also very encouraging to hear your enthusiasm. In meeting with some of the young people in our Catholic ministry, our Catholic youth centers on secular campuses in anticipation of the Synod, I asked a lot of them, what is it you want from us? What is it you're looking for from us? And invariably, it boiled down to two or three things, but I just want to mention two, and I would be grateful for your comments. One, they said, help us be part of a spiritual community. Help us belong to something that means something to us. That was the first. The second was, and I found this, especially since they had been so well catechized, they said, help us to experience God. Then I asked them a question. What do you use as you try to bring people into the faith? What do you use here on campus when you're trying to bring someone who you know ought to be with us and isn't? And they said to me, the service projects are usually the entrance for contact with them. They were telling me the number of people on campus who identify as Catholic and have nothing to do with our center, but when they started doing these service projects and inviting them to be a part of it, they found they got a good response. Is there anything to that in terms of evangelization?
I probably won't be the only one to answer this one, but I'd like to speak on behalf of being a young religious working in a high school. And part of how I do that on a daily basis is just trying to be open with my students, not trying to be judgmental, which can be really hard when you teach morality to high school juniors. But I think this was my first year actually teaching this topic. I focused mostly on Old Testament. And I just found my students just generally like grateful for what I was doing, and I was really shocked by that because I did tell them the truth, but I also let them speak from their heart. So I think that was huge. And another area, and all of us have different capabilities and different interests, but I love running and cross country, and I really connect with young people, I believe, on running with them and doing sports and stuff like that. And I'm thinking of one young person who I taught last year and doesn't need to come to my classroom, but will just come in every morning and just, even if he doesn't want to say anything, he just smiles. And when school ended 2 weeks ago and he saw me yesterday at cross country practice, he's just like, I haven't seen you in forever, and it's been 2 weeks. But I think if we're just genuine with our students and we're heartwarming, it goes a long way.
You mentioned two things that I want to point out and agree with you on. They want to feel a sense of belonging. When I was a parish youth minister, the first month that I was there, we decided we were going to repaint our youth room. Very simple project. And I went to Lowe's to pick out paint and couldn't decide on a color, so I threw up an Instagram poll. And it was the first time that young people had responded to anything on the parish Instagram page because they were getting to choose a paint color. So then we took it further, and we said, why don't you come and do the painting and save us, you know, a few hundred dollars? And they showed up in droves because they wanted to feel like they were part of it. The most successful thing I ever did at that parish was a program that was not catechetical. It was called Jesus in Java, where we went to 6:30 morning mass 2 days a week during the summer, 6:30 in the morning, and then we'd go get coffee and donuts afterwards with the parish credit card. So I was paying, and they were showing up 40 and 50 at a time to go to mass and then go get donuts because they were part of a community. You can use that idea, feel free. There's no copyright. The other thing is service projects. And I'd point out, so I think every person that works in Catholic youth ministry kind of has their favorite dioceses. And so one of mine would be the Diocese of Arlington and Bishop Burbage, because they do this incredible program every summer called Work Camp, where, and this is not an exaggeration, hundreds of young people pay hundreds of dollars to go build ramps and paint houses and rip out windows. And I had the pleasure of hosting that work camp a couple summers ago and spending time with all the young people that showed up. And there was a group of young men who, they're those high school frat boys, kind of. Like, they wear, like, the baggy shorts and the tank top kind of shirts, and, like, they're cool, and they're too cool for school kind of thing. But they were showing up at work camp, and they loved it. And on the night that we had adoration and confession, I looked over, and one of the young men was sitting in the corner weeping. And, I mean, this is Mr. Tough Guy, and he is weeping. And so I went over to him, and I sat down next to him, and I was like, hey, you know, what's going on? Like, are you okay? And he said, I've never felt like I was doing something good enough for Jesus to love me, but here I am. And it was profound. That kid signed up because he was getting his service hours for his Catholic school, and he had this remarkable moment with Jesus Christ in the Eucharist. So I think when we provide those opportunities for them to feel like they're engaging, like they're part of something, that we're, when we went and had coffee and donuts, we weren't opening the Bible, we were just hanging out, and Jesus Christ was present within that conversation that was happening. I think those are the moments where we can foster encounters with one another that lead to encounters with Jesus Christ, and that's what makes saints.
I think we'll call on Cardinal Tobin, and that will probably be our last comment. Cardinal Tobin, and then any comments you might have to make.
Thanks very much, and thank you for representing our country and participating in this very important moment. I think it's a great innovation of Francis to have this pre-synod listening on top of all the other listening that has been done. I found it interesting. I read the document as soon as it was published, and I talked to different other people and listened to some commentators who found it a little bit scandalous, some of the freshness of the language. And I said, that means it's really authentic. So if for what you had to do with that document, thank you very much. Katie, it's only because I have eight sisters. I've got to ask you. The Pew Research and some other stuff that gets published point to a very, I think, a historic fact that among young people who are leaving the church, the women are outpacing the men. And I suspect that's the first time that's happened in most of Western culture. You stayed, but presumably you know some people who've left. What are they hearing that you hear differently? And how can we reach them?
I'm going to try to not get myself in trouble. I think sometimes young women look at the church and feel like outsiders. Not because we want to be priests. I have no desire for that whatsoever. And most of my young women friends who are disaffiliated from the church would not want to be priests either. But they look at the church and they feel, I can sit in a pew. And they've never been invited or welcomed to do anything beyond that. And they perhaps even think that sitting in the pew is not enough, even though we know that we're all fully active participants, right? So I think it comes down to so many young women have tried to find a place to contribute or to share ideas or to offer thoughts or to give their gifts and talents, and they're either met with resistance, they're either accused of just wanting to be a priest, and, well, that can never happen, or they don't see their gifts and talents being highlighted or even praised. And that's not to say that a woman can only be in the church if she's doing something active. I think it's a matter of they don't feel like they've been invited to the table. Walk into any chancery or parish in the country, and it's a little old woman with short hair sitting at the front desk. Right? Women are involved in the church. There's no doubt about it. I think it's remarkable that y'all gave us a platform, and there was a woman sent from the United States to contribute and provide insights. But one thing that I noticed when I got to the pre-synod was that there were only a handful of us that were married, and I was the only mom. I'm 28 years old, I own my own home, and I have a child, so I'm breaking the mold of millennials who are not buying houses and not having babies, but I was the only mom in the room. And like that felt very isolating to me. Like, does the church not value the opinion of a young mother who is carrying a cross daily with a child that's not sleeping and throwing up and you know, doing all those things that a baby does, but I'm the only mom in the room? That doesn't make me feel particularly welcomed or invited. I think the effort needs to be, who are the young women in your dioceses and parishes that have gifts and talents, and how can we bring them to the table and listen to them and value them? I would encourage everybody to go look at The Blessed Is She, organization based out of Arizona. Just some young women that decided, you know what, we're going to get together and we're going to do great things for young women of faith. They have over 60,000 followers on Instagram. They do conferences across the country. They have daily email downloads. They send really great content encouraging and welcoming young women to feel part of the life of faith. Those that have only left because nobody said, we want you here. And that needs to be a conversation with every young woman and say, you are part of the church and you matter and we need you here.
Thank you all. Brothers, I think we want to express not only our gratitude, but our joy at the presentations today, and our wish that the Lord will continue to bless them as they blessed us this afternoon. Thank you very much. We're going to move on now to an update and discussion on, indeed, the upcoming Ordinary Synod of Bishops on Young People, the Faith and Vocational Discernment, and World Youth Day. And presenting for this block of material, we have Cardinal Joseph Tobin from the Committee on Clergy, Consecrated Life, and Vocations, and Archbishops Charles Chaput, Committee on Laity, Marriage, Family Life, and Youth. As they come forward, Cardinal Tobin's recommendation from this morning's session regarding delegation of bishops to detention centers, we talked about this. I think we want to entrust further consideration to Bishop Vasquez of the Committee on Migration and Archbishop Gomez as chair of the working group on immigration to start pursuing and looking into this. Is that all right, brothers, that we kind of work it through that way? Is that okay? That's good. Okay. Go ahead, brothers. Cardinal Tobin.
Thank you, Cardinal. Brother Bishops, as you know, the Universal Church is preparing for the 15th Ordinary General Assembly of the Synod of Bishops, whose theme will be Young People, the Faith, and Vocational Discernment. The Synod will take place October 3rd to 28th of this year in Rome. The preparation of the Synod has included a global consultation of dioceses, eparchies, and ecclesial movements. Our conference gathered reports from over 100 U.S. dioceses and eparchies and consulted with several of our standing committees and national Catholic organizations with whom they work. Those reports were submitted to the Synod office in Rome together with an executive summary by the president of the conference. In addition, last June, the Holy See launched an online survey for young people that closed in December 2017. And then convened, as we just heard, a pre-synod meeting of young adults in March of 2018. The USCCB had the opportunity to send our three fine adult delegates to that gathering, the same young adults who just spoke with us. During the March meeting, the Synod office hosted several Facebook groups for youth and young adults around the world. Approximately 15,000 comments were received in the 6 online language groups. This input, in addition to the feedback of the young people already gathered in Rome, provided the basis of the summary document presented to Pope Francis at the celebration of the Eucharist in St. Peter's Square on Palm Sunday. The global consultation, the online survey, and the summary document have all contributed to the Instrumentum Laboris from the Vatican Synod office, which will be released soon. Archbishop Chaput from the Committee on Laity, Marriage, Family Life, and Youth will now share with you the next steps in this process. Thank you, Archbishop.
Thank you, Your Eminence, my dear brothers. The documentation leading up to this year's Synod has followed a threefold outline. Number one, an examination of youth and young adults in the world today, their identity and search for meaning, their relationship with others and with the digital landscape, and their hopes for their future and the future of our society. Number two, a discussion on faith, discernment, and vocation, on how they connect to Jesus Christ, to the church, and to their calling in life. specifically on how they discern and who accompanies them through that process. 3, a careful analysis of the pastoral activities that emerge from the intersection of young people and the church. This includes the formation of youth and young adults as leaders in the church and society, and the increased need for more ministry efforts, more people, more places, more resources, and more opportunities for young people. These 3 areas, young people themselves, faith and vocational discernment, and pastoral activity, seem to be 3 ways in which the church will continue to approach the synodal process. Once we have the instrumentum laboris, and I think it'll come out at the end of this month, the bishop delegates to the synod will review this document and the preliminary materials that have led to it as they prepare for the synod in October. Brothers, the delegates, I'm one of them, welcome your fraternal input on these documents and on topics related to the synod. In addition, we hope to continue to listen to young people, like the young people you heard today. There are many of them in the church in the United States, just as the Holy Father has invited us all to both in advance of the synod and during our regular and ongoing pastoral activity in our diocese and eparchies. You know, it's a way of life. It's not just something we do to prepare for this meeting. Following the synod, we anticipate that Pope Francis will take all the input from the synodal process and from it release a post-synodal apostolic exhortation in 2019 on these topics. Of course, that's entirely at the Holy Father's discretion. But if this comes to pass, it will be the first magisterial document focused on youth and young adults, which will surely be a blessing to our work with them in our parishes, our campuses, our dioceses, and our eparchies. Within this time frame is the 2019 World Youth Day, scheduled for January 2019 in Panama. To share more details about this event and the role of bishops like ourselves in it, I invite our USCC Episcopal Liaison for the World Youth Day, Bishop Frank Caggiano of Bridgeport, to say a few words.
Thank you, Archbishop. Brothers, I would like to offer you a very brief update on where we stand with World Youth Day and our planning for that significant event in the life of the church. I will only give you highlights because there is an information sheet that is available outside of this room which gives you much more detail. But just to point out some of the highlights, first and foremost, as you know, each and every one of us is invited to attend, and bishop registration will soon open for those who are planning to come to Panama in January. It will be done online and will follow the similar process when we register for our annual events here, a 2-part registration, registering also for the assembly and accommodations. And there's a sheet outside that gives more details about that registration process. For those who are coming to Panama, we'll be staying at the Hilton Panama, which is near the central site where all of the events will occur. And it's at the Hilton that the USCCB will have its office, including chapel space for concelebrated masses, chapel for private adoration and prayer. To date, there are 5,000 young people who have registered to attend. And of those, 2,400 have paid in full. We're expecting in total 10,000 young people to travel from the United States to Panama. And of course, that would be in addition to, please God, the thousands who will celebrate stateside World Youth Day in their respective dioceses. And when we travel, there's always a concern about safety, and our staff has done tremendous work working with the organizers down in Panama as well as the embassy to ensure that the pilgrims will be safe and security guidelines will be drafted for us and for our pilgrims. We all recognize the fact that the timing of World Youth Day has posed a problem for registration, since it is at the end of January. But even mindful of that, I think we are all very pleased and proud of the fact that we are having as many come to Panama in January. It's a sign of the commitment of the young church to gather together and certainly to support our Holy Father. May I ask you to consider two things in the months ahead? First, if there is any way you can think of to effectively encourage young adults to come to World Youth Day in Panama, this is the time to do it. And I ask your help in doing that, so we have the largest delegation possible, given the circumstances of timing. The second is, as is true for all World Youth Days, the majority of young adults do not and cannot travel to the site. But we can sponsor stateside events, either in our respective diocese or perhaps in collaboration with a nearby diocese, so that everyone who is a young adult can be included in this moment of great prayer and grace. And the staff is available with resources and whatever ideas they have to help you to do that. May I also announce to you that the Archbishop of Panama, as you recall, came to address us last November, has offered us the opportunity to host both the World Youth Day Cross and the Marian Icon. They are the symbols of World Youth Day that was started by Pope St. John Paul II. It will be the first time the World Youth Day Cross has come in a journey here to the United States in anticipation of World Youth Day. So that pilgrimage has been set for August 19 to the 27th. And the World Youth Day Cross and Marian Icon will travel to Chicago, Miami, Houston, Washington, D.C., and Los Angeles during that week. Once again, there is more information in the back, outside the room, if you wish to have it. Finally, if I may just offer one last brief update regarding the process that Cardinal Tobin and Archbishop Chaput have presented regarding the Synod and the National Dialogue on Catholic Pastoral Ministry with Youth and Young Adults. Brothers, this initiative emerged as a collaborative venture with national Catholic organizations and leaders in the field to help us as bishops and the church throughout the United States to respond to this important moment in the life of the church as we strive to relate and serve our young people. The National Dialogue is a chance to go deeper in conversation with youth and young adults, particularly in response to the Encuentro and the Synod. Local conversations will begin in this National Dialogue in the coming month, all around the country. And if your diocese would like to engage in this process, I'd ask you to either speak to me or to speak to anyone in the office in a way where we can be of assistance in helping you and your diocese to collaborate in the National Dialogue. So thank you for your time, and Archbishop.
Thank you, Bishop Caggiano, not only for your presentation, but your wonderful leadership and good example. Your Eminence, Cardinal DiNardo, with your permission, I would like to pose two questions for the body of bishops for their feedback and discussion. And Bishop Caggiano and Cardinal Tobin and I will be happy to receive questions as time allows. First question, we would like to receive your input on how you look at the synodal documentation and process, anything that might help us to prepare for the synod. And secondly, we would like to ask the bishops how we might continue and even increase our support of ministry with youth and young adults nationally, as well as in our prospective diocese. So what do you think of the synodal process and documentation? And then what can we do as a body of bishops and individual bishops to support young adult youth ministry nationally and in our own diocese. So if you have questions, and the good cardinal allows, we will spend a few minutes responding to those questions.
Proce Damus, let's go. If we have some.
Thank you.
See us. Bishop Coyne, is it Bishop Coyne, please?
Thank you for your presentation. I'm concerned if we're hearing from those young people who are not in the room, who are not the people that we're getting the conversations with. Many of us are familiar with the study Going, Going, Gone that came out of St. Mary's Press in Cara, and how young people start to disaffiliate at an average age of 13. And then when they're asked why they've disaffiliated from the church, they often will say the church's attitude towards faith and reason, but most especially they'll say the intolerance of the church regarding LGBTQIA folks. Do you see any part of that, of a greater conversation occurring with them? I think that that's input that needs to be brought to the synod. How do we address, I mean, granted, it needs to be addressed at like family levels and so many other levels, but are those things that you think are germane to this discussion, or are we dealing only with the young people and others that are kind of already in the room?
I don't know if the three young people are still here who spoke to us earlier. Are they still here? But they could tell you that, I'm sure with great detail even, that at the preliminary Synod of Young People, the Holy Father, through his synodal office, invited a lot of folks who were disenfranchised with the church and not even interested. The ones that we sent, of course, from the USA, as you can see, are very articulate and very committed. But at that meeting itself, there were many people invited who are alienated in the sense you just speak about, Bishop. But if they're still here, maybe they would want to say something. They're coming back in. The question that is before us is, are we hearing from people who aren't pious like yourselves, you know, and who aren't committed to the church? And were there people present at that pre-synod gathering who were disaffiliated from the church? Do you have any comments about that? And maybe some bishops had hearing sessions that invited the same kind of folks.
Yes, thank you for your question. The question was, were there people who were disaffiliated from the church who were present in the discussions? Yes, it seemed like Pope Francis intentionally invited certain young men and women for that particular reason. There were 10 speakers, those of us young adults who were able to speak directly to the Holy Father. I was in the first half. The first five addressed the realities of our particular continents to the Holy Father, but then the other five asked him questions. He actually had a young man who was an atheist from France come up and ask him a question. There were a number of, I think maybe about two or three who were intentionally chosen for that reason. I can't recall if they were just a priori non-Christians, didn't believe anything, or if they were fallen away, but they certainly were invited to the table to discuss. Pope Francis made it very clear in his about an hour and a half address to us before any of us spoke to him, was that this was a conversation about young people. Yes, we're Catholic, this is Catholic young people, but the conversation is about young people in general. So there certainly were people, and I'm sure myself and the other two delegates can speak about the events in our own language groups, the discussions that happened there. While perhaps some we can say were disaffiliated, there were a number of them who were struggling, certainly, with the faith in different areas of their lives. So the conversations were very very rich in experiences, I would say.
And if I may, just one other thought. I think, Bishop Coyne, it really is a question of access to those individuals. How do we actually reach them? Because I think the general consensus is we want to listen to them, we want to learn from them, is how do we reach them? And part of, I think, I understand the synodal process to be, it's a moment in a process. It's a moment, it's not just an event in itself. So the hope would be that whatever comes out of it, we're empowering young people like yourselves to be the bridge to those that you have access to that we would not have access to, and always broaden the conversation so that we may not be initially at the table, but there are others who will be there who will eventually allow us to have that hearing. That would be the way, unless you see it differently, but that would be.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly it. Thank you very much.
And Bishop Barron.
I would say it's analogous to the seduction of the welcoming parish. I don't know about your diocese, but I can go to parishes that are extremely welcoming. And they everything is just right when you walk in. But they never ask themselves about who's not there. And I think that's the difference between a welcoming parish and a missionary parish. I think it's true in young adult ministry. You know, we can spend a lot of time. I have a very prominent Catholic university. It's a diocesan university in the Archdiocese of Newark. Has about 5 different phases of Catholic university chaplaincies. And I just think they're tripping over each other over there. And I'm trying to encourage, you know, in a couple of the secular campuses, there are a lot of Catholics and disaffiliated Catholics as well. So I think it's this, the one definition of the marginalized are they're not seen, or they're difficult to see, because they're obviously far from where we're looking. And I think that that's part of the challenge, too, in dealing with young adult ministry today.
Bishop Soto, followed by Bishop Barron.
Thank you very much for this conversation. And just to respond to the second point, for a while I was the Episcopal liaison for NFCYM, the National Federation of Catholic Youth Ministry, and while I know that there's a good working relationship between the conference and the federation, obviously with the synod, I think it's worth, you know, sitting down and seeing how that relationship could be deepened and what can be done to further make sure that that relationship adds value to the work that both organizations are doing.
Thank you very much, Bishop, for your question. That's part of the reason that Bishop Caggiano brought up the point of the national dialogue that is happening. It's going to be a collaborative venture between the Federation, between the U.S. bishops, but also with La Red, the Hispanic Youth and Young Adult Ministry Network, our advisory team for young adult ministry, the Catholic Campus Ministry Network, and many Catholic organizations that are working across youth, young adults, with the bishops in the world. So there is that idea of bringing a lot of those together at the table, and we're in conversation on a regular basis, which is very good.
Well, do Bishop Barron?
In that famous interview the Pope gave early on, he talked about going to the economic peripheries, but also the existential peripheries. And he named specifically those who are alienated from God. And that's always kind of guided my work in the outreach to the nuns. That's just as bold a going to the peripheries as, you know, going to the economic borders. And I think, too, there you got to talk about the online ministry, because these are people who almost by definition are not going to come to us, not going to come to our institutions. But we do have tools now to reach them. It's also, I think, very important to emphasize the apologetic dimension, because for a lot of young people, before we can begin to talk about accompaniment and friendship and relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, there's so many intellectual obstacles in the way. There's so much static in their minds from the wider culture. That has to be addressed in many cases first. C.S. Lewis said that often before the evangelist goes in, some kind of apologist has to go in to clear up the intellectual static. So I do think that's a very important part of this particular outreach to the existential peripheries. I think that should be a key element in the Synod.
Thanks, Bishop Barron. Any comment by any of ours? Okay. Anyone else have a...
You know, I don't know if it's your experience, but if you look at the questionnaires that people to answer online, it's usually done by the ones who are angry and on the periphery. So I think we do hear from them. I mean, I hear from them a lot in a lot of ways in my own diocese. And so I think they do have, as the Bishop Barron pointed out, that's where you do find them, and they're very happy to respond at that particular point.
Bishop Walk? Somebody else?
Thank you for this discussion. Just one quick thing. I went to a conference at Notre Dame with Bishop Bob Aaron and others were there on the same topic. And one thing that struck me is Bob said during his speech that when we went after those people who were disaffected, those young adults and young people, one of the shocking things to me, at least, that they said was, "Did you miss us?" That was really interesting that they said that. And then secondly, thank you for asking. Thank you at least for coming to us to ask us what we can do and how we can be more involved. So in answer to that second question, I think one thing we can do is simply ask and know that no one's ever offended that we've asked them or approached them. Most likely they're honored and actually waiting for us to do that.
Cardinal Supich.
Thank you all for your important contribution to these two big events of the Synod and the World Youth Day. One thing that occurs to me, especially as we talk to young people, but also the broader community, is the important role that grandparents can play. To have conversations with their grandchildren. As one grandmother asked her granddaughter in the conversation about the practice of the faith, am I going to be the last Catholic in our family? That is something that troubles grandparents as they think about the future generations and whether or not the traditions will be kept. So my hope would be that the Synod would also maybe not put the onus so much on parishes or staff or bishops, but also within families and the role of grandparents.
Thank you, Cardinal. Anyone else? Cardinal Tobin, do you have any kind of summation efforts that you'd like to say at the end of our feedback here?
I can wrap it up with the best of them. On behalf of Archbishop Shapiro and General, let me simply conclude by expressing our gratitude to all of you, not only for the interaction today, this brief conversation, but also for your ongoing commitment to youth and young adults. This has been evident in your response to this particular Synod process and for your support over the past 25 years to the success of the World Youth Day activities. Let us continue to pray for and work with young people. Like our beloved Pope Francis, let us put our hope in them and the gifts they offer the Church and the world today. Thank you for your time, and thank you, Your Eminence.
Thanks. Thanks all. Thank you. While we're waiting.